Mr. Friedman?
May it please the court, I'm Frank Friedman, representing McAirlades. Ben Rottenborn is with me at counsel's table. This appeal involves trade dress protection and specifically the functionality of McAirlades absorbent pads. For purposes of today's discussion, functionality means the product feature is essential to the use or purpose of the device or affects the cost or quality of the device. Put another way, it's functional if, quote, it's the reason the device works. That's what the Supreme Court said in Traffics and what this court reiterated.
Describe the connection between trade dress protection and functionality.
Okay. If a design or mark is merely ornamental or aesthetic, it's appropriate for trade dress protection as a source identifier, like the Nike swoosh or the iconic Coke bottle. If the contested feature actually makes the product perform better, gives a competitive performance edge, like the dual springs in Traffics, then it's probably more appropriate for a patent case.
And that's what I'm getting at, is whether or not if you have trade dress protection versus a patent, does one or the other essentially assume functionality or non-functionality?
A patent is frequently what's going to happen is you're claiming, in fact, that's what happened in Traffics, is the advance that was made in the patent there. They said this is a performance-enhancing advance, the dual spring. And so that was appropriate for patent. That's also why they lost trade dress on the way back, because they had admitted it was functional and utilitarian. You can, however, get a trade dress as well as a patent, the patent being for the process and the trade dress being for a mark that people identify.
I still speak to trade dress with respect to functionality. Is that assumed that it's non-functional under trade dress?
It is assumes okay. That it is non-functional. I'm sorry, yes. It assumes that it does not make the product perform better. It makes it a source identifier so we know who made it or what kind of product it is. The patented advancement by McAirlades here with respect to its absorbent pads was a revolutionary process for binding fluff pulp without using glue or binders. And this is particularly good for an absorbent pad because glue and binders in the pad take up space, but they don't absorb liquid. So a glueless pad really is a major step forward. And that process, that glueless process, is what was patented. So McAirlades pads are bound by extreme pressure as they pass between embossed rollers, and bonding occurs at the raised pressure points between these two rollers.
Speak to the burden shifting question, the issue on the burden of this. It seems as though even if, at least the way the district court posited this, the burden definitely had to rest in a shifting manner in light of the presumption that was there, but the record does contain pretty strong evidence that would have indicated that that burden would have shifted. So is there really an error there?
Well, that's a couple of questions, I guess. It starts off with the burden being on the other side had to come up, as we have a USPTO patented trade dress. And, you know, we had to prove to them that, hey, this is appropriate for a trade dress. It's non-functional. And we did that. So the burden goes to the other side. The only way that the shift comes back is if, under Traffics, if the other side can prove strong evidence of functionality. Now, it's got to be very strong. In Traffics, it was irrefutably strong, essentially, because we're on summary judgment.
We're not getting to the summary judgment question. I mean, you can survive the burden shifting question, but you're still the summary judgment question is going to be there. Could be
correct.
Strong evidence. It doesn't mean it's all the evidence.
Well, it has to be very strong, though. But then we do have, if it shifted, and we don't think it was, obviously, our position is for summary judgment, if everything is taken in best light to us, that there's copious evidence. They keep saying in their brief there's ample evidence. That's not the standard. The standard is there's no, you know, there's no genuine issue of material fact in dispute. Here, there's a lot in dispute. But the point is, even under traffics, we then have, I think it's called a heavy burden to come back. But we have evidence. So there's a big difference between this case and traffics. And I'll get to that now, because
I just want to make sure we understand.
Yeah.
Even if we move beyond the burden shifting, the summary judgment issue is squarely before us, and that's
correct.
Kind of where it seems like the heart of your case is that there's an issue of fact here at the
correct.
Very least.
Very
I know
much.
You like to win here, of course, you know, but
yes.
at the very least, that if you, your point being that there's an issue of fact at the very least.
Correct, exactly right. And so let me talk about the facts first, and then I would like to get to the traffics, because this case is so different from traffics in a number of ways.
Well, you're, to synopsize, you're arguing that functionality is it generally is a question of fact.
Correct.
And the trade dress registration, as you indicated in response to Judge Child's question, is strong evidence of non-functionality.
It is evidence of it, yes. So just to sort of clarify for a moment, the glueless binding process is patented here, but the dot embossed pattern is ornamental, it's aesthetic and incidental, and numerous witnesses, including the other side's expert, confirmed that myriad other designs or patterns would work just as well. Diamonds, triangles, puppies, that's JA 1559 to 60, JA 1666. So ultimately, the question on appeal here as to functionality is, does the dot pattern, not the glueless binding process, but the dot pattern, does it give McAirlite's pads a performance edge? Is it the reason the pads work? And the answer is no.
No, the issue before us is does that create a question of fact?
Correct.
Not
right.
For us to make that decision.
Well, I framed it as a matter of law, but the revert, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Does it create a question of fact? And it does. Let's look real briefly at just a sampling of the evidence, because there is a lot of it. First of all, the designer of the pattern, Andreas Schmidt, said he picked the pattern, quote, because it looked nice. That's at JA 319 to 20. The inventor of the patented bonding process, Alexander Maximov, testified that what comes out of the machine can be modified. This is a quote, so we can adjust the design. It is not dependent on the process. JA 417. As we already alluded to, our expert and their expert confirmed that myriad other patterns could work just as well interchangeably. Triangles, diamonds, cartoon characters, squares, ovals, and
but help us understand at what point the existence of available alternatives matters.
Okay.
Because there's some question of the district court did not find it to be a part of a prima facie case, if I'm remembering correctly.
Correct. Well, what you have in this case, and I apologize, I'll get right to, I just want to give a brief setup for it. What you have is a number of people testifying that the dot design is not functional and that all these prototypes, everything, Mr. Gawley said at JA 252-53, our expert said, all the prototypes that are in Appendix 6, they would work just as well as what you have. Basically, the other side agreed too. You know, what we're asking for is not that difficult. If you have dots and you want to put cartoon characters on them, if you want to put puppy dogs, if you want to put ovals, the key is, and again, you know, this is a not common area of the law, so I'll mention there's three.
But in response to my question, what I'm getting at is the fact that the Supreme Court seemed to suggest that the availability of alternative designs only comes up after the functionality of the product has been established.
Well, it doesn't. It isn't really that way. It is only precluded if functionality is established.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. You're right.
Right. It's precluded.
The functionality after the functionality of the element has been established, the court need not speculate about
correct. So if it's irrefutable, if you have something like you had in Traffics, which was these people had already gotten a patent for it, they then said in patent cases, this is a functional, this is an improvement, this thing is in fact functional, and then they decide to come in and say, oh, it's really a trade dress, they're out of luck. Then you don't look at other other alternative designs, but otherwise you do. And again, here, we said all the prototypes in Appendix 6. Mr. Gawley said that. Now, Mr. Gawley has 30 years experience in the field, and he's the president of the company. And what Kimberly Clark succeeded in doing was convincing the district court that it's just say-so if the corporate executives of a company say something. And that's what the judge said. I'm dismissing the say-so. Well, there are some cases where there's conclusory say-so. But in this case, notably, Kimberly Clark didn't move to strike Mr. Gawley's declaration. They didn't challenge his knowledge. And the reason why, probably, is that their expert, Mr. Mango, says at JA 1657 and JA 1660 through 62 that these people knew more about the process than he did. So they are not just some corporate executive making a conclusory statement.
Is there ever going to be any, or how likely is it that, in your view, that summary judgment will be appropriate in the context of a trade dress infringement action, which seems to necessitate expert testimony? Can you imagine a situation that you would think would be appropriate for determination on summary judgment similar context?
And I do want to clarify where I started to go before. I just want to clarify. This is functionality, which is step one, and it was bifurcated at the request of Kimberly Clark. There's also secondary meaning and likelihood of confusion, so those still have to go, and those could frequently be the subject of a summary judgment. Functionality, occasionally, I'm not saying it can't happen. There's a case called Bowman where there was yellow cable, and for digging underground, the court and the experts, people agreed. You know what? Yellow cable is a lot better than dark cable you can't see when you're digging in the ground. It's possible, but it's rare. And that's the thing about Traffics. Traffics was a rare case because the other side had not gotten, before I do that, I just want to run through, in case, you know, their argument is don't believe all the say-so, and we think you have to believe the say-so because their expert admitted our people knew what they were talking about. You also have the USPTO's findings. You have our patent language, which says that the advance is the process, not the dots, not anything else. In fact, it says there are a variety of other designs there could be. Then you have their patent application for Goodnights. And that's, you know, JA 398 is one of the best pages in here. That's their application for the dots. And they say things like the point bonds can have various sizes and shape. They're generally circular in one suitable embodiment, but it's understood the bond points can have any suitable size or shape. And then they add, it's understood that the point bonds can be arranged in any suitable pattern. So there's a ton of evidence right there. Now, I would like to briefly explain why this case is different from Traffics, because in Traffics it was foreclosed, even though this is an expert case and Traffics really wasn't, because it was foreclosed just because of the circumstance that they already had a patent for the same idea. In Traffics, the dual lock was the reason that the pad worked better. Here, the dot pattern is not the reason, and we cite all kinds of people who say the dot pattern is not the reason it works better. Mr. Gawley said that. Our experts said that. More importantly, it was not claimed to be the reason the pad worked better. In the Traffics patent, they claimed that's why it worked. Here, we didn't claim that. We claimed the process. Glueless is what makes it work better. You could have puppy dogs or hearts or shamrocks or whatever you want on the pads. It would be the same. There's nothing special about a dot. You have, in Traffics, there wasn't a USPTO registration. We have one going to the burden shifting. And in Traffics, there was no rebuttal evidence. So they were foreclosed because they had argued it was an improvement. We have tons of evidence to suggest rebuttal, even if they were to prevail, which they can't. But most, perhaps importantly, here there's no evidence that the pattern works better. And they tried. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that, and it's at the back of our opening brief, at pages 63 and 763 of the appendix, they argued at the beginning of the case that the dots were stronger. And they did that based on a one-day testing by a 19-year-old intern who was left unsupervised. And then they actually tried to run with that. So as far as credibility goes, for purposes of summary judgment on testing, that's another fact that is, you know, devastating for them, I think. So we think that the district court just failed to consider the evidence in best light to us. We think there's abundant evidence, and we should have at least gotten to a jury on functionality. We still have to go on the remaining two issues of secondary meaning and likelihood of confusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Cleveland.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Andrew Cleveland, and I appear on behalf of Kimberly-Clark Corporation. May it please the court. The sole issue in this appeal is whether the row of dots that McAirlades uses on its absorbent pads is functional and therefore undeserving of trademark protection. The district court below found that it was.
In this case, it's whether there's an issue of fact created by the evidence presented. Does it exist as a matter of law for the trial court to make a decision?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's a more precise way of stating the issue.
That's the kind of way we got to look at it.
That's right.
We got to keep focused that we're not here to decide whether this thing is functional or not. We're just deciding whether or not there's enough evidence on both sides. The other side has pointed to quite a bit of what appears to be evidence to indicate otherwise on it that would create an issue of fact.
And how
do you address that other evidence, including the fact that the trial judge seemed to have taken only portions of one expert testimony, not looked at the rest of it? Why should we get in the middle of this is what basically the question. Why don't we just let this matter be decided outside of summary judgment?
Let me address that, Your Honor, because there is evidence that you've just heard rehearsed to you. And what it primarily consists of is the argument, the assertion, that because some McAirlades executives and McAirlades expert testified that the row of dots is not functional, that therefore summary judgment should not have been granted.
That's evidence.
But if you look at the
trade dress registration, isn't that considered non-functional, evidence of non-function?
Under the law, what the trade dress registration does is it creates a presumption of validity. That then, under this circuit's precedent in retail services, shifts the burden of production of evidence to us, Kimberly-Clark. And once we present strong evidence of functionality, then the burden of production falls back upon McAirlades, and the ultimate burden of proof remains with McAirlades. And that's as any presumption would work under Federal Rule of Evidence 301, as this court said, in retail services.
A certain weighing of the evidence, weighing of conflicting evidence to get to the conclusion that it reached.
No, it did not. What it had to do, as it did here, is to look at the whole record and determine, as Judge Wynn says, that there was not a genuine issue of material fact. But there was not, and that's where I'm going to address.
Okay.
For example, the assertion that McAirlades executives and McAirlades expert testified that the row of dots design was not functional. If you look at the actual testimony itself, there's no there. They're just conclusory assertions. There's no data. There's no testing. There's no comparative evaluations. It's simply their conclusory assertions. It is not enough to withstand summary judgment to simply create conclusory assertions any more than a party could simply stand on its denials in an answer.
Did the experts say they knew more about this process than he did?
No, they did not. Well, he did say about their process, correct. What I want to correct, though, is the assertion that our expert somehow said that any embossing pattern could be used to the same performance level as the embossing pattern of the row of dots. What he said is that you could use any embossing pattern to actually fuse the binding together. You could use puppy dogs to actually fuse them together. What he didn't say is that any of those particular designs would actually perform as well as the rows of dots.
There doesn't have to be to not violate the registration here. I mean, you've got a particular pattern here, and I've been trying to figure this thing out. We don't get these cases very often.
Yes.
Fascinating when we do. But I don't understand this business of there could be puppy dogs and everything else up there. I mean, basically, you can put these indentations in there. You just got to put it in a different pattern. Can't be in the same dimensions. Could you make it just a little, space them a little further or put them in a different place?
Actually, no, Your Honor. That's what the Carolade's expert testified. There's a few areas where he says that.
You mean couldn't because it wouldn't be functional, or you couldn't because the registration doesn't allow you to do that?
You couldn't because it would change the performance of the product. If you change the design, if you use something other than the rounded circular rows of dots, the product would not be as absorbent. It wouldn't be as strong.
Less absorbent or weaker.
Correct.
That was the testimony.
That's exactly correct. And that's the testimony of McGarlade's own expert. He testified, in fact, that you needed a rounded shape in order for the product to work well. That if you used the design other than something with a rounded shape, something with a sharp corner to it, such as a square or a hexagon or a rectangle, that the sharpness of that shape would cause the pulp fibers that are used to manufacture a McCarlade's product to be damaged, thereby causing the product to weaken and lose its integrity. And in fact, here's a direct quote from their expert. He said, you, quote, pretty much need to round the corners. It's kind of circular to me. You pretty much need to round the corners on whatever shape bond you do to keep from damaging the fibers. That's at Joint Appendix 1452. And I want to go back to a very critical point that I think you raised, Judge Childs, about what's really the purpose of the functionality doctrine. And it goes to the issue of patent law. It's patents that are supposed to provide limited protection for a limited period of time. If one can use a trademark to protect a functional device, which is supposed to be protected by patent law, one could obtain a perpetual monopoly over what is a functional device when the patent laws say you're only supposed to get a limited protection. That's what the Supreme Court said in Qualitex when it said if a product's functional features could be used as trademarks, a monopoly over such features could be obtained without regard to whether they qualify as patents and could be extended forever. That's exactly the problem we face here. We have a functional trademark that one is trying to use the trademarks to extend and obtain a perpetual monopoly over. And though McCarlade's contends today that its row of dots design was purely decorative or ornamental, the record evidence overwhelmingly demonstrates that it was a functional device. For example, when McCarlade's promoted its device, its row of dots design, it touted it as being the product of German engineering, unique bonding pattern, that's a quote, unique bonding pattern provides increased surface area for excellent acquisition. And those can be found at Joint Appendix 208 and Joint Appendix 184. What they're saying there is that the rows of dots design makes their product more absorbent, a rather critical feature for a product, absorbent pads that is used to soak up liquids. And when McGarlade's sought its patents, in particular the 612 patent for an absorbent fiber web, one of its claims, the patent which sets forth in each of its claims what it believes to be the utilitarian functional features of the device, one of its claims is specifically for a dot-shaped embossment area. And that can be found at Joint Appendix 499. And McCarlade's actually tested its row of dots design too. And when it tested it, it found that the row of dots design actually provided what's called greater elongation. It stretches more, essentially. And what McGarlade's admitted in an interrogatory response, which can be found at Joint Appendix 360, is that a product with greater elongation is important because one with less stretch has a greater tendency to rip, which requires more care, more time, more cost when loading it onto a converting machine. What one has to then go back to is the very test of traffics, which says that a trade dress or a trademark is functional if it is either essential to the use or purpose of the article or if it affects the cost or quality of that article. I heard my colleague say that the test is whether the device works. That's not what the Supreme Court said in traffics. It said it's whether it's essential to the use or purpose or if it affects the cost or quality. And in fact, in traffics, the Supreme Court was clear that the Sixth Circuit, when it had denied summary judgment there, it had reversed the grant of summary judgment, that such a standard of competitive necessity or essentiality was not necessary to show functionality, because the point is that anything that affects cost or quality makes it functional, and therefore it falls within the scope of patent law, not trademark law. That's what makes the test, whether it affects cost or quality. And let me talk, if I may, a little bit about McGarlade's expert. It was asserted, I believe, that McGarlade's expert said that any design could work on McGarlade's product. Dr. Murray, that's exactly right. That any design could work, that all the shapes are essentially fungible. But I think that needs to be tested against something that McCarlade said in its reply brief, which is that, and if you look at page 5 of the reply brief, you will see that McCarlade has set forth in a block quote an excerpt from Dr. Murray's testimony. It's edited. And the sentence is, pad performance, and pad performance has been bracketed, indicating that it is substitute edited language. Pad performance is not dependent on the bonding pattern being a round circular point. But if you go back and look at the testimony of what Dr. Murray said and examine what that bracketed language replaced, here's what he really said. I want to be clear, and I'm quoting, I want to be clear, subject to those conditions of fiber length matching the spacing of the elements, and sufficient area to capture some of the fibers, and sufficient pressure to form the fusion bonds, it's not dependent on it being a round circular point. What McGarlade's excerpt leaves out, what it replaced with its own bracketed language, is precisely the condition that makes the row of dots design functional. What Dr. Murray is saying here is that the shape used on McGarlade's product is dictated by certain engineering considerations, including spacing, shaping, and size. It's those considerations. Everything is subject to those considerations and those conditions. It's what makes McCarlade's row of dots design functional. And if I may turn to the alternative designs issues in this case. Essentially, what McCarlade's is saying is that because there conceivably could be other designs that could conceivably work as well as McGarlade's row of dots design, that must mean McGarlade's design is not functional. But other than that conclusory assertion, McGarlade's provides no data to show that those other alternative designs would in fact work as well. One cannot create a genuine issue of material fact. One cannot survive summary judgment by merely putting forth supposition. Speculation, and that's what this is, speculation does not create a genuine issue of material fact. But even more fundamentally than that, regardless of whether there may be, and I emphasize maybe, because there's no other evidence in this record that other designs would actually perform as well. Just because there
Doesn't
may be.
Doesn't the patent say that? Doesn't the patent itself say that other patterns, rounded patterns, could be used, elliptical,
What the patent says is that other design shapes could be used to fuse the fibers together. What it doesn't say is that other designs would work equally as well in terms of absorbency, strength, and manufacturing capability. You could use those to fuse it together, but that doesn't mean that everything is going to work as well. It's going to be as absorbent or as strong or anything else. It doesn't say that. And even if it did, the point is that even if there were maybe more than one solution to an engineering problem, that does not take away from the fact that the row of dots design here is also an engineering functional solution to that same problem. What this means is that all of the designs are functional, not that none of them is. And that's why the Supreme Court in the traffic's decision, once it determined that the design at issue there was functional, determined that there was no need to engage in any further assessment of alternative designs. Because the fact is that once one finds something is functional, it's no excuse to say that there are other alternative designs out there. And here, the evidence is overwhelming that the row of dots design that McCarelades uses is in fact functional. We have the promotional activities of McCarelades. We have their own patents. We have their own testing data. We have the testimony of their own expert that all of this is functional. What this case comes down to, and what it really means, is this, and as the district court, I think, properly recognized. McCarelades' product looks the way it does because it makes it a better absorbent pad, not in order to identify who made it. That's what trademark is supposed to do. It's supposed to tell you who made it. But this pad.
I want to make sure we're dealing with summary judgment. So we're to look at this evidence in a light most favorable to the other party. And here you dismissed maybe the testimony, the statements of the employees, including the president, as being conclusory. And yet, these are people who have been substantially into business, and it's testimony. I mean, it's under oath. So it's evidence. And we've got to look at that evidence in a light most favorable to the other side. And ultimately, what happens, even if we decide, okay, well, there's some evidence there, it's not the end of the day for you. It means you now just got to go and convince at the next level that this has this functionality, meets the functionality test.
Yes, Your Honor. Their testimony is evidence. The question is, does that testimony create a genuine issue of material fact?
When viewed in a light most favorable to them, does it create an issue?
That's correct. And I turn to the Celotex and the Liberty Lobby decisions, which says that a party opposing a motion for summary judgment must come forth with specific facts to demonstrate that there's a genuine issue of material fact. A conclusory assertion is no different than standing on your denials in a complaint saying, I didn't do it, to try to create.
Is this the only way this can be functional? Was it what you call the best way, or what is it that makes this functional?
They could have done many other things to try to show that it was functional.
Alternative designs available.
Are alternative designs? Not that we're aware of, Your Honor, because there's been no data to show that alternative designs actually work. The only evidence they essentially have is the assertions of their executives and their expert. And I turn to the Sixth Circuit's recent decision in Groeneveld, where they say, on this precise issue about whether putting a witness on the stand saying it's not functional is sufficient to survive summary judgment. That wasn't a summary judgment case, but it was a case in which the Court of Appeals reversed a trial court allowing it to go to a trial, saying it should have never gotten that far.
And what your experts say, there are a lot of possibilities.
As I said, what our experts said was there are a lot of possibilities that could be used to actually cause the fusion of the fibers to go together. He did not say, and he was stout in refusing to say, that each of those designs would work equally as well in terms of absorbency, strength, and manufacturing capabilities. You could, I mean, it's limitless what number of shapes you could use to actually cause something to be fused. It's not limitless, and that's why the engineering considerations come into play here as to which shape actually causes the absorbency, the strength, and the manufacturing capabilities of the product to work. And to get back to the point about the assertions of executives constituting or potentially creating a genuine issue of material fact.
What are we to make of the fact that there seems to be relatively little testing either way? There's really very little testing as to whether or not the dots could be replaced with a puppy dog or whatever without affecting the absorbency and strength. The only thing that was discussed is that changing the arrangements of the dots affected absorbency or strength. But no other design element or no other feature.
I see I have 5 seconds. I'd like to take the time over that to answer your question, if I may.
Of course.
And then perhaps turn back to Judge Wynn for one final comment, which is there was a lack of testing in this case. However, there is an abundance of evidence that the row of dots design did provide functional characteristics to McAirlade's trade dress design. The promotional activities, the patents themselves, there was testing data for the row of dots design showing that it provided greater elongation and stretchability. And their own expert testified that if you change the shape, if you made it less than rounded, that would make it damage the fibers of the product and cause the product not to perform. What there wasn't testing data on this, and what McAirlade's refused to provide, was that somehow or another the other designs that they hypothesized, like diamonds or puppy dogs or whatever else you might hypothesize, that those would actually work. They've never provided that data. They simply say it. They'd work just as well. It's speculation. And that's why the speculation doesn't create a genuine issue of material fact. And if I may, just 1 minute, I do want to talk to you, Judge Wynn, about that point about putting witnesses, because I do think the Sixth Circuit had it right when they said in the Groeneveld case, and that's at 730 F3rd at 507, the bare act of putting a manager on the stand to claim that non-functionality, to claim that an article is non-functional, is not sufficient to create a triable issue of fact. If that were the law, any plaintiff could get to a jury trial by simply mouthing the legal conclusion that its product design is non-functional. And that's the issue that was faced here by the district court. That's what he got right, and that judgment should be affirmed. Thank you,
Mr. Cleburne. Mr. Friedman, you have a few minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
What Kimberly Clark just delivered, in essence, was a closing jury argument. I mean, they argued some facts, some disputed facts.
Well, I wish it were as clear to me as it seems to be to you. Kimberly Clark has come back with testimony that talks about the role that the pattern plays, the space, the spacing of the dots.
Correct.
And what they say is, having responded, you then had to meet that with something other than assertion. So what specifically are you saying you have done to meet that other than supposition?
First of all, what they're saying is wrong, and a lot of the facts that they're citing are skewed in best light to them. Having said that, they say there doesn't have to be testing from us. There was no testing from them except for incredibly botched non-credible function testing from a 19-year-old. So that cuts against them. We did have testing with another, the harsher, the lines. And our experts said that that was, you know, it was within the margin of error. It was no different. We
I
had,
don't know what you're saying. That wasn't clear.
There is a big discussion. What I guess I would tell the court is at pages 8 to 12, we were not trying to hide the ball. If you don't have any bonding, if you don't have any bonding at all.
Well, let's go to the questions of absorption.
Sure.
And strength for a moment.
In the harsher case, which was the T-126,
Let's not do that. Let's okay. stay with the facts of this case.
It is this case. It is the other. We had two different prototypes at first, and then we got rid of one because people liked the other. That one, there was testing, and it was within, they were the same within reasonable areas, you know, it was within 1%.
As to what?
As to a tensile strength, absorption, elongation was different. But the point is, it's not our burden. We had the prototypes. It's their burden on summary judgment to prove that there's no question of fact. But
Judge Duncan asked you, as to what? You said as to tensile strength absorption. That was kind of quick. Was it as to tensile strength, or was that?
The testing dealt with both, and our experts said it was within, and Gawley says in his declaration, they're within the same, they're close. Okay, and they also say that all the prototypes, and there's a case called Thomas and Betts that says you can have hypothetical prototypes. We don't have to come forward with all kinds of prototypes. What I want to make clear is that at pages 8 to 12 of our brief in reply, we weren't trying to hide the ball. It's obvious that if you don't have any bonding, it's not going to work. And if you do have bonding...
I'm not... What I'm trying to get to is... Assuming for purposes of my question that evidence has been put forward to show that the row of dots affects how well the product functions, what do you point to as needing what becomes your responsibility at that point to come up with something that meets or contradicts that?
Okay. There are a lot of them.
Okay.
It doesn't need to be round.
But
they're saying that the dots do it. It's not the dots.
And what I'm asking is not argument, but
correct.
What facts did you put forward? What testing?
Okay. There wasn't much testing. Okay. There was some. And it's
any testing.
There was testing that showed the harsher pattern and this pattern pretty close. Elongation
what?
Was different
as to, what?
As to tensile strength and absorption, and it was not. It was different with elongation, but we have experts. I mean, if you read the Gawley declaration and others, the point is they have got us hung up on testing, which isn't even our burden. They're trying to get us say dots.
You're not.
I'm sorry.
I'm asking for my benefit in understanding.
Let me say this
in the context of summary judgment. So, just for purposes of my question.
For purposes of your question, we came forward with evidence from Gawley, from Schmidt, from our expert, that these dots weren't any different from any other design within the parameters. Of course, it's within the parameters. If you had no dots, it wouldn't
within
work.
Within parameters of what?
And the parameters are on pages 8 to 12 of our reply brief: spacing, bond shape, bond point size, and there are a lot of sites I could give you.
To accomplish what?
To accomplish the pads working, the pads not falling apart, and the pads, they have to not fall apart and they have to be able to absorb stuff. But that's in general. As far as once you meet those requirements, and those requirements are set out between pages 8 and 12 of our brief, any pattern will work. And that's what all of our people said. And that's what the prototype said. And I'd like to point out, in our patent, they're not dots. They're hexagonals. I realize, could I just say one other thing? Their expert, Mango, talked about triangles and squares being perfectly fine at 1668 to 6. It's a matter of chamfering. It doesn't have to be round.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We will ask the clerk to adjourn court for the day and come down and greet counsel.